Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I am your host, Chris Spangle. To my left is Greg Lenz. How are you doing?
Doing well, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great. And then on the line with us is Mark Clare of Lions of Liberty. Mark, how are you doing?
What's going on, guys? And I am also very far to your left, all the way in California.
Yeah, you are in Los...
Not politically, though.
Are you in Los Angeles?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Well, that is very glamorous. It's our first Hollywood star on the podcast today.
Yep, Hollywood Mark is what they call me.
Now, you just graciously interviewed us for your podcast, and that is forthcoming in your feed. So where can people get
that? If I decide to release it, I'm still debating that.
Oh, whatever, man. That was gold.
We didn't meet the requirement.
We nailed it.
It was Liberty Gold. I'm not messing around.
Now, where can people find your website?
Well, you can logically find it at lionsofliberty.com. And then, of course, you can find our podcast. We do articles over there, too. And then, of course, all our podcasts are posted over there. You can also find us wherever you find podcasts, on iTunes, Stitcher, all that jazz. We post everything up on YouTube. Pretty much nowhere you can't find us if you're looking. So if you're having trouble, you're probably just not adept at using the internet.
So I started to notice the screaming lion in iTunes and online. And there used to be a site called toplibertarian.com. Rest in peace. I love that website.
Yeah, what happened to them?
It's a guy named Patrick, and Patrick just did it out of the goodness of his heart. And I think he probably just got tired of building code and probably got a real job. And, you know, he was a younger guy, and this was probably just a passion project. And then it.
That'll happen to the young ones. They get real jobs, and suddenly it's over.
Yep, exactly. Now. So it's been a year? When did you decide to start Lions of Liberty, and when and why?
All right. Well, let's see. If we really want to take it all the way back, we should take it back to like 1999 and 2000 when I was in college and had a few good friends there. And now we can immediately skip forward to 2008 because that's when I kind of started getting. I was sort of a libertarian-ish in college. A good friend of mine, Howie Snowden, he's a regular guest on our show. And he basically just one day, well, not one day, he was pretty much ranting about this stuff all the time. He was actually a congressional page in college. He has a pretty interesting story. And he actually met and he used to speak to Ron Paul. He would just go into his office and like hang out with him. And Ron Paul would talk about foreign policy and all this stuff. And he wasn't even working for Ron Paul. He just like liked him and thought he was really cool. So he would always tell me about this Ron Paul guy. And he got me reading Ron Paul's column, Texas Straight Talk, and then he handed me a Harry Brown book one day. So I was already kind of like on this path of sort of thinking about things in a different way than the standard left-right paradigm. But I wasn't too political after that. I mean, I had conversations with people, but I wasn't, you know, a total psycho about it like I am now. So fast forward to like 2007, and I became psycho when this Ron Paul character that I'd been reading, whose column I'd been reading for like 8 years. I just knew him as like a columnist. Like I knew he was a congressman, but I didn't really follow the comings and goings of what Congress was doing. So I didn't even think about him that way. But I saw this. I remember vividly. I was sitting at work, obviously not working, on Yahoo.com, and I saw this headline that said, Ron Paul, Texas congressman, want Ron Paul, announces presidential bid. And I'm like, what? This guy? I mean, not because I didn't want him. I was like excited, but I was just like, not someone I ever associated with the idea of running for president, with the idea of seeking power. I was kind of confused, actually, but I was very interested in it. And, you know, the rest is history. After all the debates he was in and his amazing moments in the debates, that stuff got me fired up. It got me, this is how long ago this was, I was posting Ron Paul videos on MySpace and getting into conversations with people that way. And I would email stuff to people. I mean, I would email my dad, and this is one of the greatest victories ever to me, is winning over my dad, because I sent him a Ron Paul video once where Ron Paul was talking. I guess he was kind of relating the situation in the Middle East and Iraq and Afghanistan to Vietnam. And my dad was a Vietnam vet, so Vietnam's kind of a trigger word for him. So he basically just said, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. This is nothing like Vietnam. Save your money, because I was like, I'm donating money to this guy. He's like, save your money. I'm like, God, dad's a neocon. But months later, my dad had a Ron Paul bumper sticker and was voting for Ron Paul. So, and this is from a military veteran, I don't want to say pro-war, but pro-military. You know, yeah. He has ties to the military. He feels strongly about national defense and, you know, all that stuff. So he's kind of got a preconditioned response to anyone that's abjectly anti-war. But when he actually sat down and listened to Ron Paul and read his books that I sent him, he began to realize that, oh, no, he's not – Rand Paul's not even really a pacifist. I mean, in some ways you could say he is in terms of his foreign policy prescriptions, but you know, even Ron Paul, he's not an anarchist, he's a minarchist, and he says that the government should be for defense. And I know I'm going on a lot of rants, side rants here, guys, so feel free to stop me at
That's
any
all right.
moment.
That's what we
it's
do
It's kind
here.
Of what I do, though.
Hell yeah. No, we love it.
Yeah, but I was really getting into Ron Paul, into his campaign. And as I did that, I, of course, delved more into libertarian philosophy and yada, yada, yada. But I wasn't content to just do this on my own. I ended up bringing a couple people along for the ride. My good friend John Odermatt briefly lived out here on the left coast. And I vividly remember one day at a bar. Well, vividly might be an exaggeration because we were at a bar drinking heavily, double whiskeys. And he asked me, so who are you supporting for president? Kind of out of the blue. We weren't talking politics or anything. It didn't go quite in that order. We were talking about the war and Iraq and all this kind of thing, and I was very anti-war. And what he said was, "Well, so who are you supporting for president, Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama?" I'm like, "No, I'm actually supporting this 80-year-old Republican." He's like, "What? Who?" That's not what I expected. So he's immediately the paradigm is blown, and you can see this shift taking place where it's already just makes his brain explode because he can't possibly associate being anti-war with a Republican. That just doesn't make sense to him. He's a Republican. He was pro-war and, you know, all about going into Iraq, all about this stuff. And, you know, just hearing that, I mean, you can see the first chink in the armor. It's like, wait a minute. Something's not computing, does not compute. So, I mean, that really started the path for him. And a couple of my other friends kind of clung to it at some point. Our good friend Dom, another good friend of mine, Brian McWilliams, who's a regular on the show as well out here in Los Angeles. I've known all these guys since college, and one day we kind of started this email chain. We called it the Liberty Chain, how original, of us and our friends just kind of talking politics, talking Ron Paul at the time. But it kept going even after that 2008 campaign and straight through the 2012 campaign. So we've been talking about these issues for like 4 or 5 years, and basically we were sending these long form emails discussing things, and basically I was just like, why don't we just like put this on the internet? I mean, like, blogs exist. I mean, if we're already typing this shit out, why don't we actually put it out there? So that's how the Lions of Liberty first blog, I mean, it was first just like lionsofliberty.blogspot.com or whatever, and then finally one friend of mine was like, dude, what are you doing? If you want to do something, you need a real website.
Yeah.
Like, at least the actual domain name. I'm like, okay. So I had my one friend basically just like walk me all through it and build us a decent looking website himself. So that's how we kind of got the website going. And then the podcast came about because I was a frequent podcast listener. I mean, it's basically like all I do when I have huskies that I walk for an hour plus every day. And that's how I get through it, by listening to things. That's how I get through exercising, because I kind of hate exercising. But if I'm listening to a podcast, then I can kind of like lose where I am and get through it. So
right.
I was just an avid podcast listener. So it made sense to eventually do a podcast. Now, I might sound like semi-confident talking to you guys right now, probably because we just recorded another interview already. But this was not the case like 3 years ago, or I guess it was 2013 when I actually started the podcast.
Sure.
So I guess it's only 2 years ago.
It's always hilarious to go back, and if you go, if you look
brutal.
At the, yeah, you listen to the first episodes, it's not great. It's Creighton Harrington.
It's so bad. I'm doing that thing where you like smack your lips every time you're about to talk, and I hear it like thousands of times in the show. And this is after my quote unquote editing job. And it's just like, it's an hour long discussion with Stefan Kinsella about intellectual property. It's like, if you wrote it down, it might be interesting, but when I hear it, it's like so painful. I want to kill myself.
Stefan Kinsella was your first interview?
Oh, wow. That's intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you just start at the top of the mountain?
Well, I got to go backwards here, because that's actually how I had the vague idea I wanted to do a podcast, but I hadn't taken any action. It's just one of those things. Oh, yeah, I'll start a podcast someday, whatever. But then I was actually, I don't know if you guys were kind of browsing the internet like I was when there was the big sort of IP
sure.
debate between Stefan Kinsella and Bob Wenzel. Are you guys familiar with that?
Yeah, I was surfing YouPorn.
I was a little busy. Anyway, it's like this 2-hour quote unquote debate, but it's just a shit show. It's not a debate. They're both like laying into each other. It totally goes off the rails. But because of that, it got a lot of attention in the libertarian nerd community. There was a lot of talk about intellectual property. And I had emailed Stefan Kinsella some question I had, just like, I wanted to write an article and I had a question about it, and he was like, yeah, this would just be a lot easier if we did like a Skype call or interview about it. I'm like, okay.
Total libertarian move. Let me expound upon and tell you.
Exactly. He's like, I can't possibly put this in one email. I'm like, oh, geez. All right. But he's like, let's just do a Skype call. I'm like, okay. I'm like, and then I'm like, light bulb. I'm like, all right, well, I've got this libertarian scholar that is going to have a Skype call with. I'm like, I may as well record it, and I may as well start that podcast I was thinking about. So that's how the podcast started. It's really evolved since then. I think I, because of that first interview, and I kind of just for a little while stuck with the straight up interview format. And I was just basically interviewing like people I'd been reading for all this time, like Walter Block and Dr. Mark Thornton. I interviewed Kane, Glenn Jacobs, because I'm a huge wrestling nerd too. So it was like the perfect crossover for me. Just ticking down a list of people that I wanted to interview. But we've kind of evolved since then. And now I've brought in some of that original crew, some of our other friends, all sort of related to our time in college. We went to Penn State. So that's where the Lions comes from. That's why we're Lions of Liberty.
Oh, okay.
Lions. Yeah, I guess I should have mentioned that in the whole founding story.
Right.
But yeah, so that's that kind of core group are all people that I know from college. And they all participate. We do one segment called Libertarians in Living Rooms Drinking Liquor, where we just do that. We just drink and talk about what's going on with zero plan whatsoever. And lately we've been doing that every single time there's a GOP or a Democratic debate. We have a whole reaction show about it. And I still do interviews as well. I've just really tried to mix things up and make things interesting, because as we talked about in our show, you know, there's a place for nerdy, scholarly talk about liberty and natural rights, and I do try to have that conversation on my show, but the normal person doesn't just want to hear that dry conversation. They want to have some fun. They want to hear a show that's interesting, that sounds good. There are a lot of other factors involved that get people to actually want to listen to something. So that's what I've started to realize. I mean, I had no plan. I knew nothing about audio editing. I mean, I knew none of this stuff when I first started. I just threw the damn thing up there. So I've really evolved. I mean, you can, if you go back and listen to episode one or two and listen to now, hopefully the difference is huge. I mean, it is when I listen to it. So it's really been a process. And for people that have been listening from the beginning, they can have kind of been on that process with me. And it's not just a process in podcasting. It's also a podcast in my beliefs. I think my views have shifted even just in the time I've been doing the show on many things. And it's kind of, I'm trying to expose everyone to our own sort of internal dialogue, our own sort of internal conversation about what liberty is, how it should apply to the real world, and all that great stuff.
I apologize to everybody for the horrible hiss at the beginning of the show. I just figured out what was wrong. I had to, I've ruined two podcasts today.
Killing a cat in your
professional
studio?
No, it's an old crappy board. Yeah, I think that's sort of the philosophy that we have here. I mean, it's like sitting around in the living room drinking beer with a bunch of your friends, and sometimes it makes sense and sometimes it doesn't. But it's not stuffy, it's not boring. You're going to learn some stuff, you know, our claim to Greg's claim to fame. I mean, in the Boston bombing podcast, he mentioned ISIS. Nobody had heard of ISIS at that point. So, you know, over the years we've grown, we've evolved, we've changed, and we've had a lot of fun doing this. You know, it's tough to get together because, like, and I don't know if you have this problem, but, you know, we have a problem getting everybody together because there's 15 different people that we can choose from, but just Greg and I, our schedule has gotten so much busier. So we take a razzing, it's a weekly podcast. Well, we try to be a weekly podcast.
It is, and I feel like the news cycle this last year hasn't been as good for liberty as the year prior to was,
sure.
You know, with Snowden and then finding out about all that was going on, Rand Paul's filibuster. You know, there seemed to be just a powder keg of libertarian issues to discuss. And then this year has been a reversion back to statism. And
yeah.
So it seems like everyone's in sort of political zombie mode because the election cycle heats up and everyone's plastered to the TV, focused on the debates. And I'm probably partially guilty because we focus on them too. But and then you get things like Paris and you get all these events that are hyped in the news. I mean, all this crap going on in the Middle East. And suddenly people put rational thought to the side a little bit. And they say, I mean, I hear a lot of things like, oh, your libertarian philosophy is great, but what are you going to do about ISIS? And it's like, all right. I mean, yeah, I see what you're saying, because ISIS is a real thing. I mean, it's rational for people to have some worry about ISIS. I don't think they have any way to come swim over here and actually like invade the country or anything. But yeah, there are definitely people out there that would like to harm us and can do that. But we really have to look at the core and the roots of issues. And it can be very difficult to do in amongst all the political noise, especially during election season, where anything that happens is just amplified because you got, you know, 20 presidential candidates that are going to be out there making their statements about every single thing that happens. And it never ends. And it's really, really difficult to sort of wade through it. But at the same time, that's why we cover the elections. That's why we cover the debates, because, hey, we may as well take advantage of the fact that people are paying attention. So luckily, and hopefully we'll get friends of ours listening that would normally maybe not tune into a libertarian podcast, but well, they watch the debates, and these are some of my buddies, so I guess I'll just listen to what they say. So it's just another way to get people talking about the core issues, hopefully eventually.
Yeah, we actually stopped doing interviews, much to the chagrin of Joe Ruiz, our good friend and confidant here on We Are Libertarians. You've done a lot of you mentioned you're getting away from the interviews.
We're not getting away from it. It's definitely still a core part of the show. I mean, at least one interview per week for the most part, unless I get one of those. Right now, the show is 2 days a week. So if we got two debates in a week, which actually happened last week, or a couple weeks ago, there was a Democrat or a Republican debate on a Tuesday and a Democrat debate on a freaking Saturday. And this is how nerdily dedicated to liberty I am. Me and Brian McWilliams, we sat in his apartment and watched that Dan debate and recorded a podcast at 9 p.m. on a Saturday night.
Man, yeah. He is in love with liberty. I wouldn't do two podcasts to save my life.
Especially the Democrat debate.
Oh, God.
They got rid of the fun people like Jim Webb and Lincoln Chafee.
I loved Jim Webb. He was awesome. And then Bernie should be fun, but I realized Bernie's only fun when Larry David's playing. Real Bernie's not that fun.
Yeah, the Larry David Bernie would win in a landslide, and it wouldn't be close, and it wouldn't matter what he said. Everybody'd be a socialist.
Exactly.
Well, who is your audience? Like, who do you come in contact? I mean, we have an awesome group of listeners, and I'm not just saying that. I truly mean that. Like, we're always surprised when people message us and say they listen and that they're fans of the show. And
wait, you guys get messages?
We do.
Oh,
yeah.
Tons of messages about.
But you know, it is a lot of just your typical libertarian crowd. I mean, and I don't mean that dismissively. I mean, is that your core? I mean, who are you trying to reach in your podcast?
You know, it's a good question because I hate, like, you know, parsi answers that don't directly answer the question, but that's what I'm going to give anyway. Because it's kind of both. It's like, all right, so my core, in the terms of the circles I was in on the internet, which is where my podcast audience started, because I was a big poster on the Daily Paul, and which is now Popular Liberty. I was posting there for years before I was even, you know, had the website or anything. So I have people that just knew me from there, so I would always post the podcast over there. And Michael Nystrom, who runs that site, is great, and he would always help, you know, put my stuff on the front page. So that really helped get a lot of that hardcore nerdy on top of things. I keep saying nerdy, but I'm describing myself here, so I'm not trying to denigrate anyone when I say that.
It's implied when you say libertarian.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, people that are on top of current events, on top of,
we all know we're virgins.
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of the beginning of my audience, but I mean, that's not what I want. My goal is really to expand libertarianism, not just libertarianism, because I even hate that label. I hate all real labels, but just the ideas of liberty, the ideas of individual liberty, seeing a more rational thought process in our politics. And I obviously don't just want to speak to the already converted, so to speak. I want to get new people interested in this conversation in the first place, because it's one thing to break down the actual ideas of what liberty is, of natural rights, and all of that stuff, but there's another step you have to get before that, and that's interest people in even hearing it in the first place. And that's very difficult, and I'm not saying we're especially successful at it, but I mean, I know personal friends of mine that I've had political conversations with due to the podcast. They'll be like, oh, I checked out your podcast. Oh, it's actually interesting you guys talked about this. So it's, I mean, even if it didn't go outside my circle of friends, which it has to based on the download numbers, we have some amount of people outside of the people I know in real life listening. So I like to think it's getting to other people in some way, shape, or form, but there's no doubt that the core audience is already libertarian-ish people. I would say that's undeniable, just because that's where everything has grown from. But at the same time, I'm not excuse me, at the same time, I'm looking to challenge them too. I'm looking to challenge beliefs. I'm looking to challenge a lot of libertarian dogma, because frankly, I think there is a lot of dogma out there in libertarianism, and what we need is less dogma and more rational dialogue. And then there's a difference between principles and dogma. A lot of people think they're out there being principled when they just come out and repeat things like hate the state, end the Fed. Well, you're really not conveying a principle to anyone in the public when you say that shit.
Right.
You're just repeating a freaking catchphrase. And a lot of these people that say these things don't know what the hell they're talking about. And if you don't, and you just say this crap, you're actually setting the rest of us back who are trying to have intelligent conversations. So people out there that are just doing that, stop. Or, you know, think a little bit deeper about what you're saying and, you know, join this conversation, because that's what I'm trying to do. We need to learn how to better define our own beliefs, but we also need to learn how to talk with regular people about them, because most of the world are regular people and they're not us.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, and honestly, you know what? We don't have on our podcast any kind of like, well, we've got a, we, you know, at Bob and Tom, we've got P1s. It's male 54. You know, that's our demographic is men. You know, you target towards certain demographics. Here, we just like do what we want to do, and then an audience kind of catches up, and it's all born out of our social networks, and you know, and then you have on people, and they share it, and their friends pick up on it, and it just kind of blossoms over time, and yeah, it sneaks up on you. You one day you wake up and you go, oh my god, we're top, you know, we're in the top 20% of podcasts. How Tom Woods is talking?
We're
about.
The Romneys of podcasting,
right? And I think that's cool. Like I have a general awareness of your podcast. I've listened a couple times.
I'll take it. General awareness, that's a win in my book.
That's exactly right. A general awareness.
And if you want us to listen, you can't have Canadians on, especially libertarian so-called Canadians. I'm totally kidding. I just listened to your last episode.
No,
fantastic.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah, Tim Mohn, he was awesome.
Tim Mohn.
If you guys ever decide to do an interview again, I can't recommend him, because he's actually like a cool dude, too.
He should be our Matt Damon. Nice. He should be our Matt Damon, because we mock Canadians relentlessly.
Oh, yeah. And he even has that floppy head thing going on, I think. But I didn't see him visually, so maybe not.
And listeners, just an editor's note, the Canadian thing is not funny anymore. Stop it. Right, Greg?
It is very old.
I like your editor's note for the podcast you're not going to edit.
Exactly right.
Audience note.
Audience note, stop saying Canadian. It's not funny anymore. I'm looking at all of you.
He's getting very pink, and he might apologize.
And Greg is so diplomatic and nice. He's like, listen, you know, sometimes it gets a little old, and what he wants to say, you all are fucking annoying me.
Yeah, you're making me furious.
Greg is banned for 24 hours on Facebook today. This is
you announced my death, which I greatly appreciate. My entire wall was well wishes. Hope you get better soon.
It's good to know people care.
Then he published my phone number, and I got 9 calls and 5 rapid fire texts. I had to shut my phone off. It was, like I said before, he's a real mensch.
You spent a year putting my face on other faces and having me have sex with Justin Bieber.
Well, he was Canadian, and.
You guys are so cruel.
No, we are brutal. We are very brutal.
The non-aggression principle does not apply to the internet at all.
No, no.
Well, you gotta, so, like, Chris is he is the Mr. Nice Guy positive on Facebook, and then you get him in a private chat, and it's the most disturbing, awful memes you've ever seen, and just trolling you right to your face about all these trigger words for social justice warriors. And then he disavows me publicly anytime I return serve. And, you know, it's like,
this is in poor taste.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, this is awful. How could you post this?
Meanwhile, I said, yeah, that's okay to post.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the last one, he sent me a fictional Christmas card of him standing over a male with his legs on Chris's shoulders saying Merry Christmas, Greg, and got more than a few messages saying, was that real?
The implication is that I'm dressed as Santa having gay sex with another hairy man, and he's mad that I put his phone number out there. So
would you do that to your co-hosts?
I wouldn't have. Well, now that I've heard the idea from you guys, possibly.
I
wouldn't have thought about it before.
I like it.
But see, this is how males bond. Males bust each other's balls. Women, it's through a close, intimate conversation. Men, we make fun of each other and say you have.
Our way sounds way more fun.
It is.
Right. There's close, less scorekeeping.
Conversations. Well, ugh.
It's like Greg says all the time. It's why men are funny. No, I'm just kidding.
the genetic difference part. Yeah.
Yeah, no. I'm just kidding. Women are very funny. So
now you went from Penn State, and then did you immediately move out to LA? Because that's kind of odd to go from Happy Valley all the way out to the West Coast. It's a pretty big cultural change.
I wish it was that awesome of a story. I actually, well, I did, you know, I went to school and I went to school for like TV production stuff. So that's what I focused on. So obviously, like, if you really want to do something big, and it's either New York or LA. So in my mind, I did want to move to like a big city, to one of those cities. But I grew up in Connecticut, not far from New York City, and I had spent a lot of time there. I knew New York City, and I knew what being cold was like, and I was pretty sure I was sick of that. So that actually made the decision about where to go pretty easy. But I did end up doing the whole it wasn't in the basement, but I did live with my parents for 2 years after college. I ended up getting a TV job not too far from my home in Connecticut, and I just spent those 2 years just like saving money And then I jetted out to L.A. like a responsible young man with a savings account.
Nice. Very cool.
Now,
but yeah, I've been here for about 11 years, so
wow.
Here I go, aging myself.
What is the issue that you find yourself most passionate about?
Probably, I mean, if I had to pin it down to one issue, it's probably the war on drugs, because to me, that's the most obvious, terrible affront to humanity perpetrated by individuals in our government. There are a lot of issues out there, and even foreign policy is one of them, that are nuanced. It's not necessarily always black and white, but to me, the war on drugs, it's black and white. It's clearly wrong to use violence on someone that has done no harm to anyone else, has done nothing more than hold a plant or own a plant or sell a plant to somebody, sell a substance to somebody, hold it in their house. I mean, through no violent action of their own, they are assaulted by our government. They are thrown in cages. They are having their lives ruined. Even if they don't go to jail, the felony conviction ruins their lives and ends up finding them in jail anyway. There's just no way to possibly justify it in any, if you have any sense of, you know, moral, I mean, I don't know what the term I'm looking for is. Moral. Come on, guys. Help me out.
Integrity?
Yeah, integrity.
Yeah. Moral compass. That's the word.
Compass. Common sense.
There's just no way to justify it rationally. And so I think it's my number one probably issue. I mean, my real issue is overall trying to get people to think rationally about politics and rationally about how we act towards our fellow man, and more importantly, how we advocate our political systems act. Because for a lot of people, a lot of people will buy libertarianism the way we describe it, as, oh, not hurting anybody else, not stealing their stuff. And, you know, that's almost everyone will agree with that. But when you actually get into the nuance of issues, and when a lot of that violence is hidden from sight, you know, people talk about a regulation of some kind and they say, well, that's not violence. It's just like a regulation. Like, yeah, but how is it this stuff enforced ultimately? It's all enforced through violence. So even if you support a law, at least please recognize that it is going to be enforced violently if someone doesn't comply. And even that is a big hurdle for a lot of people to make, because they just, if they don't see it, it's like we're babies again. We're toddlers. Out of sight, you don't exist. You know, when your parents walk out of the room, you went, oh my God, my parents aren't real anymore. So when people don't see the violence, they think the violence isn't there. It's not in the system, and it is. And I think the drug war, the war on drugs, is the absolute most black and white example of that.
And it is so pervasive too. I mean, if you watch The House I Live In, it's a documentary on Netflix that's brilliant. I recommend it like every podcast.
So that, The House I Live In?
The House I Live In on Netflix. It's so great. I mean, it was really a turning point for me and made me passionate about the war on drugs, because it just shows you the tentacles that it has. It's not just about, well, you should be able to smoke pot. It gets into issues of criminal justice, of fairness in terms of, let's face it, there are a lot of black people in jail for drugs, and there are less white people in jail for drugs, and there are certain biases. And I don't want to say white privilege on this podcast, because Greg will get up and smack me right in the face. But essentially, we have economically destroyed certain segments of our population, not just through drugs, but also in other ways, like through NAFTA. So lower income classes don't have work. And so the only viable economic system in a place like Detroit is selling drugs. And so we have, through economic policy, created this economic need for people, and then we lock them in jail, and it just becomes a way to warehouse the lowest 10% of our population, be it white, black, Native American, Asian, whatever, Latino. It's really a destructive force in our society in terms of cost, criminal justice, the cost that it has on families. You want to talk about family values, Mike Pence and all you dumb motherfucking Republicans.
Huckabee.
Like, pull your head out of your ass.
Yeah, I love this show. This curse.
Pull your head out of your
ass. Yeah, my show too, but it feels safer here.
It's a safe space for cussing. No one will be offended.
Go ahead. Say fuck. Say whatever you want. You can drop the C word. I have. And we're destroying families. And then, you know, the very people who want to increase the penalties for drugs are the very ones who are like, all these black people need to pull up their pants. Black lives matter.
Then they'd get a job. Right. Then I wouldn't have to pay for them.
All these deadbeat dads out there. Well, no kidding. You keep throwing them in jail.
Right.
And you know what's never really talked about is, if you look at the 1900s in the United States, it was basically a case study in economic and cultural warfare on the African-American population. From the time of, like, the early progressives, like, even, you know, Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson, it was so much social planning and centralization that we know better than them, or we're going to, you know, really it was racist, but they need something separate. We were, and you know, even going back to economically, because you talk about what crushed it was inflation. Inflation damages the poorest among us. It doesn't affect any, I mean, it doesn't affect the person at $110,000 a year in income, but it kills somebody that has makes $17,000 a year and has a small child and is a single mother. All of a sudden, those dollars don't go quite as far, and they have every incentive in the world in order to go get on a social program. And then you have a cultural issue, because you say, well, if I can't get ahead, no one will hire me because I maybe I did drugs. Now I have a record. Now I can't make more than $17,000 a year. What's the point? And then it spreads like a virus through a community, and you arrive at Detroit.
And that's not even, I mean, that's putting aside the fact that our prisons are basically slave camps for corporations and the government. People in prison work at jobs that pay like 12 cents an hour, 20 cents an hour, and they're making products for Fortune 500 companies. They're making products for the military industrial complex. And you got people out here screaming for a $15 minimum wage. How about a minimum wage for the freaking prisoners if you're going to call for one? For
How about 15 cents?
Yeah, 15 cents. I mean, it's a joke, though. I mean, our prisons are nothing more than corporate slave camps at this point. Yes, there are some truly violent people that probably should be in jail, but that number is extremely small, in my view, and it would be a lot smaller if we didn't have policies such as the war on drugs, where we're assaulting so many people and ruining their lives, often from before they've even grown up and had the chance to have lives, by removing their father from the situation, by keeping them in poverty, and you know, stuffing them into the system where it's a cycle. You know, their life is ruined. They don't have a father. They can't get a job. They can't get an education because they can't afford it. They live in a bad neighborhood. They've turned to drugs too, and now they're in jail. Now they're working for Fortune 500 companies while Republicans are out there, you know, proselytizing and moralizing and calling for, you know, black people to pull up their damn britches. And I'm so sick of it.
It's not just Republicans. It's also Hollywood.
Oh, you're right.
Hollywood. I mean, and that's part of what this documentary.
That's not code for Jewish, is it, Chris?
No.
Okay,
no,
good.
No.
We're, you know, we aspire to be media moguls. So.
That was Mark that I was referencing. So I was in this documentary. I mean, they make parallels between, you know, blaming societal ills on the Jews and blaming societal ills on drug users and the lowest 10% of our population. And they're the reason that we have these certain ills. And if they would just get their act together, then we wouldn't have this problem. And I saw an interesting article today. We just had another mass shooting. I don't know any details because it's December 2nd. We started at 7. There's like no details on this mass shooting. And by the time we put this out, it's going to be, you're going to have heard, the news cycle will have moved on. But I'm sure in the coming days, what happens every time we have a mass shooting, we will dissect it and talk about it and have, you know, discussions about guns. We will try to figure out this person's mental illness, what made them tick. And there was an interesting article in, I think it was the New Yorker today, published on December 2nd, I saw it on their Facebook page, talking about why do we go to the efforts to dissect the psychology of a mass shooter, someone who goes, basically the white mass shooter. We give the benefit of the doubt to the white mass shooter, but then we never want to examine the motives of the Muslim bomber, and we never want to examine the motives of the black or Latino gang member. Society never spends time like pondering what are the motivations behind their actions.
No, they're just bad, generically
right.
Evil
it's,
people
it's
born
just,
as gang members that have no, there's no rationale behind anything they do.
Right, it's a binary choice. It's the good versus evil. It's bad or good. It's black or white.
It's settled.
A gang leader. Right. There's no in between.
Right. It's settled. There is no room for discussion that public policy might be influencing the decisions of the brown bomber or the black criminal. But the white shooter is new, so I guess we're talking about it. What makes these people tick?
How could it go wrong?
Right. So I thought that was an interesting point for people to kind of think about, and why don't we have those discussions in this day and age? They of course said it was racism.
It's political capital. It's being able to fundraise on it.
Yeah, that too. So, what other issues rustle your jimmies? What do you talk about the most on Lions of Liberty?
Oh, wow. I mean, another big one for me. It kind of ties into the drug war in many ways, but healthcare and government's influence on healthcare, because it's one thing that affects us the most. I mean, I'm pretty healthy. ish. But I mean, in the sense that I don't have to go to the doctor for anything really regularly. So yeah, I might not notice how the government's intervention in healthcare affects us as much. But you know, it's something that affects almost everybody now, especially now because now we're required to buy insurance and required to buy insurance that has certain standards. And those standards for most of us are resulting in much more expensive health insurance and a much less care we get from it, or if you can even call it care. I mean, I don't call having insurance care. Care is something you do with yourself or with your doctor, or it's not having this corporation backing possibly that's going to pay your bills at some point down the line after they get upcharged 1,000 times. I don't really call that care. I call it fleecing more than anything else. And you know, but the problem a lot of libertarians have, I think, on this issue. Not just libertarians, I mean, right-wing Republicans, whoever. They just want to blame Obamacare. Obamacare. Ah, we got to end Obamacare. Repeal Obamacare. But no one talks about the fact that healthcare was terrible before 2012. It's not like we had this wonderful free market system that was thriving. And you know, suddenly Obamacare came in and tried to crush us. Like, that is ridiculous and stupid and retarded. How about I use 3 different words for that?
Everybody's going to be triggered now.
Gee, why don't you just say
that? I just triggered your whole audience.
You just trumped us.
And anyone in the neighborhood. But, I mean, to look at the real roots of the causes of healthcare, I mean, if you want to go to the real roots, it's the ideas of the people, but that's getting a little deep. But, you know, we had the AMA. When the AMA was formed, they essentially took monopoly control along with the U.S. government over how healthcare was run in this country. They closed a lot of hospitals. They said we can only have X number of hospitals because we need to have certain standards. This shit goes way back 100 years. It goes back to medical licensing. If you want to become a doctor, you have to go through X amount of of schooling approved by accredited by whatever organizations, the FDA's control over the medical industry or the pharmaceutical industry. There's so many layers to this, and they go so much deeper than Obamacare. If you just repeal Obamacare and throw your hands in the air, I'm not sure things are going to get better. They might even get worse totally opposed to Obamacare. It's affected me negatively in many ways. As a freelancer, I work at a few places, and some of those places use me a significant amount, or at least used to, because the way they classify me was as a part-time employee. So once you're a part-time employee with Obamacare, once you hit 30 hours a week, they consider you a full-time employee that they have to buy insurance for. So while all my progressive friends out here will blame the evil, greedy corporation that doesn't want to buy me health insurance, the reality of the situation is when you make a rule like that, what's the result going to be? The result is going to be I'm going to be working a lot less. So I used to work at some places 4 or 5 days a week. Now, 3-day maximum. Hmm. I mean, I've seen my income from one company alone drop by 30% this year only because they're using me that much less. And it's a direct response to this law. And we can blame greedy corporations all you want, but there's something called cause and effect, and let's not blame the victims. So if a law like this is imposed upon businesses, imposed upon individuals like myself, we should probably blame the imposers. But at the same time, we have to realize that the problems do go so much deeper, and at least with Obamacare, that there is some sense of justice in the sense that, look, if you have a population out there advocating or totally fine with medical licensing, totally fine with AMA, totally fine with the FDA, all these organizations that make healthcare more expensive and out of reach for these people that end up, the ones that we're saying, oh, people are going bankrupt because they don't have healthcare. Those are the people being injured by the rest of society's bad ideas.
Right.
There is some sense of justice in saying, well, we should pay for their healthcare. It's not as black and white as other people need to make it. And I tried to break it down in that way and try to get to the root of things. So I think that's what a lot of libertarians, political dialogue in general misses. It misses the root problems, and it looks at the surface things, the stuff that CNN and Fox News are talking about and not really getting below the surface.
Right. And then that's something, it goes, it's interesting you said person to person, because this is something that libertarians never talk about. It drives me crazy. How many times do you hear them rail against the corporation? The only reason corporations exist is to limit the liability of the shareholders and owners. So you're talking about you've created an incentive right there for them to take more risks because there's less personal downside. And then they're protected whenever they do something wrong because they're going to be rich and off and they can go start another corporation. They'll use their own personal funds to do so. And so when you do that and you create insurance companies around that where they have limited risk, well, of course, they're going to fight tooth and nail to pay out as little as possible because they're going to create a conglomeration with limited liability that is protected because they can outspend the people suing them. And then you have doctors. I mean, it used to be you had an in-home visit, you paid them cash, and if you know, someone was really sick in your community, your church members or whoever your community members were came around and maybe you'd even bartered services or whatever to get health care. Now it has to be approved by a provider within network by doctors who they're sure are accredited, even though the doctors wanted the AMA so they could create their own cartel. And the insurance companies want,
sure, exactly.
You know, they want their own little fiefdom in every single state so they can not have to sell across state lines and have more competition. I mean, at the very core of everything is who wanted the corporation? The rich people. And libertarians need to talk about that. We limit the liability because, and what's dangerous is it even affects the economy because when you limit liability, like Wall Street back in the 90s, Michael Bloomberg used to work for Salomon Brothers LP. They were one of the most famous investment houses. All of a sudden, everybody's a C corporation on Wall Street. And why is that? Because under a limited partnership, you could still have your personal assets risked in the event of a shareholder lawsuit. And so now they're completely protected. What do I care? I'll take all my funds out. I'll use other people's money they invest with me, and I'll make enormous bets because now I have no downside. And you wonder where this boom and bust, when paired with the Federal Reserve and fractional reserve banking, no wonder we're hitting super cycles where it's huge booms, huge crash, huge boom, huge crash. And it has to be talked about more because libertarians can be cast as non-populist a lot of times, but that at our core has to be...
And we should be the most populist.
We are.
Be the populists.
We are because it's, I'm going to shake your hand, look you in the eye, and I guarantee this work or I don't. Not, oh, well, sorry, you sued a defunct LLC. Good luck putting a judgment on something with no assets. I'm going to go walk away and start a new one.
All right. Well, we need to wrap up because right after we say goodbye, we have a special treat for everybody. It's more us. So we're actually going to splice in our conversation with Mark from his podcast, Lions of Liberty. We ask that everybody go and download his podcast. Get more libertarianism in your life. If you feel like you're not getting enough us, then get a little bit of him.
I kind of feel like you guys are the West Coast. Like, we're the East Coast the Lions West of Liberty, and you're the West Coast. We are libertarians. And it's inevitable our fates would meet.
I like it.
Yeah,
we will have to merge us. You know, we recently did our first crossover podcast. I don't know if you guys have heard the Johnny Rocket Launchpad, but they do a great show. They're based up in the Northwest, so they're like our cool Northwest hipster, like, you know, Liberty contingent.
You're their ironic you guys, libertarians.
You know, so maybe we can maybe we'll do a crossover with you guys and get the whole crew in someday.
We're your hearty Midwest corn fed friends. So So thanks for joining us. So here at
everyone needs some.
Yeah, here at the end, we like to give everybody a chance to self promote, to talk about anything that you might have missed. We're gonna let. Would you like to go first?
No. Well, I'll let the guest. I will say thank you so much for inquiring. And he actually took the lead in putting this together. And
yeah,
I appreciate
totally.
It.
And then we did not make it easy on him, so we appreciate his persistence because we are all three of us busy fellows. So. It was great to talk to Mark. So Mark,
you don't
go ahead.
Yeah, you don't get 140 plus podcast guests without being persistent. So, you know, something I've just learned to have to do. If I don't hear back right away, I'll just bug him again. No problem. but yeah, guys, it's been a blast. Thanks for coming on my show. Thanks for having me on your show. It's really great to connect with some people that are seeing things in the same way I do or a very similar way. I'm sure we could have many late night conversations about the little aspects of libertarianism we disagree on and get super nerdy. But in terms of the way that I think we need to reach new people and the way we need to advance these ideas and get to the core of issues as well while having fun and hopefully producing an entertaining product at the same time, I think we share a philosophy on that. So, yes, in terms of my show, I guess I'll use this time to promote an announcement I haven't even made on our show yet, but screw it. I need some synergy. We need some promotion. But, you know, we do our podcast, Lions of Liberty, twice per week. And I don't know what the hell we're thinking, but we're about to start doing it three times a week.
Oh, my God.
We have a spinoff coming. We actually have one of our founders of our show and our website, John Odermatt. He is, for over 2 years, including through a marriage, through a new baby, didn't miss a single week of his column, Felony Friday, where every Friday he looks at a felony and kind of filters it through the ideas of individual liberty and tries to really get to the core of the issues in it through looking at certain current events, things politicians say or what have you. He's been doing that column for over 2 years. Wow. So we are now going to morph that column into a weekly podcast. So starting early next year, early 2016, there will be a weekly Felony Friday podcast. as part of the Lions of Liberty feed, and then we'll do. I'll also keep doing two shows per week. So we're going to have a three-day-a-week show at Lions of Liberty. So if there's any time to jump on board, friends, it's right now when we're just really about to expand the app.
Well, that is very, very cool. Congratulations.
Thank you. I don't know. Like I said, we might be biting off more than we can chew because sometimes it feels hard just to even keep up with the amount that we're doing right now. But screw it. I'm a go big or go home kind of guy.
Yeah.
I started off doing it once a week, and then last year we went to twice a week. So by like 2018, we should have a five-day-a-week show. We'll finally catch up to like the Tom Woodses of the world.
If you love it, do it. I mean, in 2013, we were doing, we were putting out as a group like five or six podcasts a week, and it was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun. And some of my most fond memories of podcasting are during 2013 when we were robust. not very busy in life, but very busy in podcasting.
Passionate about liberty and a basement apartment.
Yeah. So, Greg, the floor is yours.
I wish I could find some good information on the San. Because how far are you from San Bernardino, Mark?
It's about an hour and a half.
About an hour and a half. Okay.
North of here, yeah. Although that's like hour and a half with no traffic. So if you tried to go there at 9 a.m., it would probably take 3 hours.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
LA,
no doubt. No doubt.
Traffic, but that's not a joke. I mean, that's
like, yeah, yeah. So I guess I'm going to talk about British Parliament voted to bomb ISIS in Syria. So they have decided to go down the path that France did that got a terrorist attack happening and 130 people died. That isn't going to work. One thing that is totally missing from this debate is how do you beat an ideology, not how do you defeat an opponent. This isn't an opponent that's a nation state. They claim they are. Really, they're just extortion artists. They're no different than the five families in Little Italy in New York. So the question has not been asked whatsoever. How do you defeat an ideological opponent? Now, the hardcore neocons are going to say, well, you be a Trumpitarian, you bomb the shit out of them, and you take their oil and send in Chevron to rebuild. That isn't going to work. The other way is you really have to get them to question who they are. And one thing I think Vladimir Putin, I know I shouldn't say this, but I think he is the one that is going to open up a discussion of Middle Eastern, the future of Middle Eastern politics by calling out Turkey about possibly brokering the ISIS oil, about who is an ally, who isn't an ally, and what does an ally look like in the 21st century. And so I did want to give him props, and watch this week, because Vladimir Putin has a trigger, a short trigger, and I have a feeling the Turkish president calling him out by saying, if you can reprove it, that we're buying ISIS oil, I'll resign. If Vladimir Putin's good at anything, it's one-upping, and I have a feeling the Turkish president is about it. He's in for a treat.
It's good theater. I mean, it's frightening that it's good theater that might lead to like world war and death for everybody, but it's definitely interesting to watch.
You could have stopped it, but you did nothing.
Yeah, I tried to warn you.
Let's all prepare for the happening. I have, you know, this self-promotion. I do so little self-promotion on this podcast. I like Snapchat. I think Snapchat is a fun way to chat with people. Join me. It is C Spangle, SPANGLE, at Snapchat. I do not send out nudes, so if that's what you're joining for, then that's, I'm sorry, that's what you will not get from me, at least. And it is just a fun way to chat with people. So if you're on the Snapchat, hit me up and see all kinds of, that's where I put the really embarrassing stuff. So, because I know it's only going to last 24 hours or 10 seconds. So, thanks for joining us here on the podcast. We are not going to give you the closer because you don't need the closer, because we are going right into a new podcast here. It's like two for one. This is a BOGO podcast. So now, here is Mark Clare with Lions of Liberty. Which tells you that Ted Cruz has never seen a vagina in his life.
Welcome to the Lions of Liberty podcast. Here is your host, your guide, your shining beacon of liberty, Mark Clare.
Welcome back, friends, to the Lions of Liberty podcast. It's great to have you here for another fun episode. This is episode number 166, and that means you can find the show notes for today's show featuring everything we discuss at lionsofliberty.com/166.
And guys, while you're shopping for your friends and family during this holiday season, one way you can help us here at Lions of Liberty out is by doing so through our Amazon referral link. You can find that over at lionsofliberty.com/Amazon. You click on that link, bookmark it, do all your holiday and whatever shopping. These guys have everything. Do it all through that link. Costs you nothing extra to do, but gives us a little kickback so we can keep the lights on and expand our operation here at Lions of Liberty. Really appreciate the help. And boy, do I have a fun show for you guys today. I've got some fellow podcasters on the show. With me now are two of the minds behind the We Are Libertarians podcast, Chris Spangle and Greg Lentz. Gentlemen, are you ready to roar?
Roar!
Roar!
I will take that as a resounding yes.
We were trying to get my cat to meow into the microphone, but it didn't work.
Oh, that would have been sweet. So, gentlemen, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. It's great to finally speak to you guys. It's weird when you listen to someone's podcast for a while and then speak to them in real life because it feels like you're just picking up where you left off somewhere, even though you've never spoken to them ever. So that's kind of how I am with you because I've been listening to your show a lot lately. I really only discovered it a few months ago, but I've been checking it out. And I really like what you guys are doing over there.
Thank you. Yeah, we and it's funny because I've listened a couple times and then I saw your photo and I was like, that's not what I thought he looked like at all. And I get that all the time. It's you're much fatter than I thought you would be.
Hey.
No, I meant me. People
oh, okay,
say,
you. No, you were exactly the size. No, I'm just kidding. I don't even know how to spin that in a good or bad way, to be honest. Wait, what was I supposed to look like? What did you think I was? I don't know.
I don't know. You're a libertarian podcaster. You're much more handsome.
Oh, well, thank you.
I would assume a libertarian podcaster would be.
Well, I checked out your bio, and now you work in...
I hate when people do this. All right, go on.
You do work out in Hollywood, right? Like freelance?
Yeah, I mean, I hate the phrase Hollywood because I don't live near Hollywood, but I understand that's what everybody calls anything in L.A. But yeah, I work in a TV production. So I work mostly in studio shows, live events, live sports. I do video editing, video playout, all very live, kind of fast-paced atmosphere, which is different than the podcast because the podcast I can do and I can totally produce it so I sound way better than I actually do in real life. That's the fantastic thing about having post-production capabilities, as you guys know.
And for your listeners, I'm Chris, that's Greg.
Oh, yeah,
and
we should probably point that out at some point.
Yeah, and we don't do any editing at all. We've done our podcast for 3.5 years now, and we're up to episode 130, 140,
yeah,
I don't know.
This will be 132.
And after 3.5 years, like at the beginning, it was like, take out the ums, make us sound really good. And now I'm like, screw it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the middle. I mean, at first I did what you guys did. I sat down for like hours and like parsed down every sentence so it sounded perfect. And then I was like, wow, that was a lot of effort to sound barely any different. You know, because in reality, I mean, that's how people talk. We talk with ums and ahs. And it's not the worst thing in the world if other people realize that we're also humans and not robots and actually, you know, talk in the same way. At the same time, I was able to discover an amazing audio editor that I work with now. So I do have someone that's able to package these shows together for me and not take out the ums and ahs anymore because that was just too obsessive. But to tighten it up a little bit and, you know, do all the work that I just don't feel like doing because I'm so damn busy in life. And I spend so much time just putting thought into the interviews themselves, except this one, as we talked about before the show. I have no plan with you guys because who needs one? But, you know, I spend so much time, mental time on it that when I actually get to the production end, I'm just drained and I don't want to deal with it anymore. So now I just have someone else, John Daubert, fantastic man, who helps me with that. So
that's why I've got one in the can that we recorded like a week ago that I have not posted yet. And see, I work for the Bob and Tom Show, which is a nationally syndicated radio show with 4 million listeners a day. And I'm the web director, so I do podcasting full-time, essentially. And when it comes to my podcast, I'm like, it's like a janitor doesn't want to clean at the end of the day. Chefs don't like to cook.
Exactly.
Like, I don't want to edit this audio.
I mean, I work in I do a lot of work on football stuff, and, you know, I'm 3 or 4 days a week I'm dealing with NFL things. So then if I actually get a day off and there happens to be a game, I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, so it's rare we actually get a primetime game of any kind. But it, you know, when that happens, I theoretically want to watch the game, but I don't. Like, I don't want to go to the bar. I don't want to think about what's happening. I don't want to watch, you know, all these plays and highlights because that's what I do all the time. Like, I just have zero interest as soon as I'm not working in it, which is, I don't know, kind of sad in a way. It's killed many desires I have to really watch sports that I work on, but at the same time, hey, it frees me up for more liberty. So
yeah, see, it's flattering that you say you don't have a plan with us, because that is sort of our goal with our podcast, where we have about 15 different people that we've rotated in.
Yeah, you guys got quite a crew coming in and out of there.
Yeah, I mean, I started the podcast in March of 2012 when I was the executive director of the Libertarian Party of Indiana, just as a way to kind of promote the Libertarian Party to local college kids. And then when I left there, I brought the podcast with me so it didn't die. And then Greg came on about a year later.
I was used for content because I had a blog of interesting news articles, and Chris and I had gone to, you know, from elementary school on up and then church together. And then he was like, hey, would you mind just posting this on here? And then he invited me one Saturday to show up and record, and I really never left. It was kind of like a virus.
Before you know it, you're hosting a podcast. Like, wait a minute, this was not what we discussed at all.
Well, Greg just kept showing up, so Greg ended up being the permanent co-host, and now it is he and I are the backbone of the podcast. But we have about 15 to 20 different local libertarians that are all millennials that rotate in and out, and it depends on the subject. And you know, some of those who started the podcast with us are no longer there for sometimes contentious reasons.
To be clear, they're still alive. They're just not participating anymore.
Sort of.
They're dead.
It sounded a little possibly morbid for a second, so I just want to make it clear in case anyone is holding early funerals for some people.
Listen, I'm a libertarian. I take things very seriously.
Of course.
And if we get into a fight, you're dead. You're dead to me. Kill you because that's the non-aggression principle, but we will not speak and I will write blogs
about it. So We Are Libertarians. It's the name of the podcast. It's pretty much straight up. There's no confusion about what you're trying to say there. So how did you guys kind of get to that point? And I guess we can start with you, Chris, since you're one of the founders of We Are Libertarians, or the founder. I'm not sure exactly how you look at it. But how did you first get into the ideas of liberty? Because none of us, well, maybe not none of us. Some people probably grew up in libertarian households. But most of us probably didn't, since because if we did, there'd be a lot more libertarians in the world. So how did this all start for you?
Oh, gosh, no. My grandma stuffed envelopes for Reagan and has photos of George W. Bush all over the house. And my dad's a Republican. Although neither of my parents are political in any way, shape, or form, I somehow got the politics bug as a young kid and really was always into it. I was a Republican. I went to IUPUI, which is a college here in Indianapolis that you go if you made bad choices in high school.
Used to be. Now it's great.
Yeah, now it's a great college. And got involved in the College Republicans there, worked on Mitch Daniels' campaign. It was 2004 when I became the president of the College Republicans. 2003, I held a Support the Troops rally, i.e. pro-war rally.
Mini Cheney.
Right, Mini Cheney. And then after, shortly after that, like 2005, I started working at a radio station. And it was a news talk station, and I was an intern for the morning show, and their host, Abdul, started picking apart all my little Rush Limbaugh arguments, because I wasn't making arguments from fact or research. I was making arguments from the script that I had been taught.
The talking points.
Yeah, exactly. And so I really kind of became politically homeless, because I just was like, I don't have confidence in what I believe. And there was a guy here locally named Andy Horning who is a libertarian that I worked on one of his campaigns, and he really mentored me. And then Ron Paul came along, and I really was libertarian for the most part. I mean, in 2004, when I was president of CRs, they about impeached me because I didn't care about immigration or gay marriage. I was like, who cares if gay people get married? That was bad. But
Oh, no. Not in that circle, my friend.
Yeah, foreign policy became a hang-up of mine until Ron Paul in 2008. And then I was like, oh, okay, I get it. And so I started identifying as a libertarian and started watching the Libertarian Party, and they were not effective here locally. And I said, hey, what's the problem? And they said, we don't have an executive director. I went on to work. I said, I work in radio. Make me an offer. You can beat it. Trust me. And they did, and I went and worked there for 4 years and had a wonderful time growing the libertarian philosophy. Then I became the marketing director for the Advocates for Self-Government, the world's smallest quiz people. I did that for a year, and then I became the web director at the Bob and Tom show.
Sold out completely.
My sole claim to libertarianism now is I do a podcast. So I used to do all kinds of field work and activism and organization, and then I said, you know what? I'm just going to talk and let people listen.
What a sellout. I can't believe you just don't do liberty 24/7. That's outrageous. You actually want to have a job that pays you money to do other things.
I did for 5 years. And you know what? I had to at some point become a grown-up and start making money. And now I have a beautiful luxury apartment. 700 square feet. It's open concept. No speed bumps in the parking lot, Mark. I have two cats. I'm a happy man.
A poon palace, if you will.
Calm down.
So you're telling me you guys do a libertarian podcast, but you do not live in basements of any kind. Or you might not even have a basement, it sounds like.
No,
No. He has his apartment. I have mine. We do not live together. We're not
apartments that you pay for yourselves, right? This is just a new concept to me. I'm sorry. Maybe I've been
right. Yeah. Uncle Greg and Uncle Chris spend a lot of time together. No, we live separate.
Although you do love to say that I'm a confirmed bachelor like Lindsey Graham.
So yeah, no. I lived in my mom's basement till 26, so that I do have some libertarian street cred.
So Greg, what about you? How did you get into all this wacky libertarian stuff?
Well, there was this podcast, and this guy was the executive director of the Libertarian Party.
Ah, he sounds really interesting.
Yeah, he invited me to this basement apartment and said, yeah, we just kind of hang out with a bunch of white guys and talk about politics. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm a white guy. I can do that.
He's not joking either.
No, but actually, I would say my whole life, I kind of feel like this is, for the most part, everybody. I felt like a libertarian without knowing what it was. Sort of do no harm. If it neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg, it doesn't involve me. And I didn't know politics or come to know politics really until college, and had a political science professor that worked for George W. Bush in Texas. And I realized then I wasn't necessarily a Republican, because George W. Bush was neither conservative or valued many of the same things that I do, other than a few economic policies, but not really, maybe the occasional tax cut. And then it kind of went away. I was dormant, but I got very interested. I finished my degree at IUPUI like Chris, and tried the college Republicans. They weren't my particular brand of vodka, so I didn't like that too much. But then when Chris asked me, when he was building the website, I had a blog where it was really just interesting news articles, and he needed content. So he was like, hey, would you mind just posting this every day? And then as I got into it, I kind of, I followed politics. I knew it pretty well, but I didn't have necessarily a philosophical grounding. And then he just completely ruined me by exposing me to voluntarism and minarchism and anarcho-capitalism. And I've always liked economics. That was my primary interest in college. So the Austrian school really hit home and made the most sense. And now we're just here 3.5 years later, and I guess I am a libertarian.
So a resounding endorsement. I guess I'm a libertarian. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm a little L libertarian,
One thing about the podcast, I've always invited people on who are not purists. Our podcast really is geared, it's like a conversation within my living room. Because all these libertarian podcasts, yours excluded, I mean, it's if you listen to...
It's okay. You can include mine.
There's a lot of professors, and that is what makes up the information of the libertarian movement, and that's just not accessible to most people. They don't talk like most people. It's not going to grab most people. And coming from a background, I wanted to engineer a podcast that people would actually download in mass quantities for UINTJs. And I have never been afraid to invite people on, like Greg, who come from a Republican, or Gina was on the podcast for a while. She's a flaming liberal. Because I think it is interesting to hear somebody progress into more of an anarchist over time. I mean, I certainly have had that happen. And I'll take some heat for that sometimes, because Greg will say something like, I want to bomb all brown people. Scratch quote, episode 50. But that's just not, people don't start from a pure perspective. And that's part of the problem with the libertarian movement and libertarian media in general, is that you have to start with purity, and you have to speak as an authority. And what we tried to do is wrestle with a lot of the questions and wrestle with the events of the day and do it in a way that is fun. And, as I have become less political, the show has probably become less political and at times a little more Oprah. But I think there's room for that in the Libertarian Party, too. It's not just all facts and figures. There's also some emotion that taps into politics as well.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that, because that's kind of what I'm trying to do with Lions of Liberty with my show. I'm not the only one there. I do host this program, but we founded the Lions of Liberty with a couple of college friends of mine, and we were totally apolitical in college. Maybe not apolitical, but we weren't libertarians. I mean, this stuff only happened when we came together later in life, when Ron Paul started running for president, and we started talking about this stuff, and then eventually we're like, well, since we're spending all this time emailing each other and talking about this stuff, why don't we just blog about it? And then one day it just became a podcast, because I just decided to make it one. But that's kind of what I'm trying to do, is bring people on a journey, not say this is how everything should be. I like to bring in interesting guests, some of which are professors, but not all of them, and have sort of intellectual conversations in a sense, but to try to translate them into a normal conversation, basically. Try to take an intellectual talk, press it through this sort of filter and then spit out sort of a normal conversation that people can actually access. Whether or not I'm successful at that, you know, can probably be up and down, you know, depending on the week, but that is the goal. And that's what I'm trying to sort of bring forward, because at the end of the day, we can't just have like nerdy intellectual conversations. They're important ones to have and they need to exist so that we can sort of figure out our beliefs. But when we're trying to reach out to other people, like when I want to talk to my friends about this stuff, I mean, I can't send them to the Nerd Podcast. I have to send them to either you guys or myself, or I mean, Jason Stapleton. I know you guys have had him on the show and I think he's doing great work. There's a lot of people that are starting to do work that's a lot more accessible to, I guess, the quote unquote everyman, the guy that's whose face is not buried in you know, in Man Economy and State for 10 hours every night, you know, somebody that just goes to the bar and has a beer and comes home and, you know, might toss on a podcast while they, you know, who knows what they're doing.
Yeah. I started this in 2012 with two Young Americans for Liberty guys, Creighton Harrington. He went on to actually work for YAL. He doesn't come on the podcast much anymore because he's grown up and grown out of Liberty. And and then Chris Galt, he was a great addition, a little troublemaker, and then left under tense conditions.
But hilarious.
So, yeah, that was great. Great podcasts, as they've literally gotten into a physical fight one day after a podcast. So we've talked about that over the years.
Non-aggression, gentlemen, non-aggression.
That's what I tried to say. I just sat down and laughed at him because it was the worst looking fight I'd ever seen in my life. But
you know what's funny? I actually, a friend of mine, Brian McWilliams, another Lion of Liberty, he does our Rand Paul analysis show and all of our debate reaction shows. And we actually ran a beer pong fundraiser, and we've known each other for like 12 years. You know, friends that have known each other for that long can fight. Like, it's fine. Like, we just fight and then we're over it. So I don't know. Something was happening at this beer pong fundraiser that we had for Ron Paul. And he was like getting on my case about not making a shot. I don't even remember what the issue was, but I got annoyed and we kind of had a little scuffle. Like, I don't know. Maybe I pushed him. Maybe he slapped me, you know. And like a couple of these guys were like, guys, come on. We're supposed to be Ron Paul people. We're not supposed to be violent and non-aggression. I'm like, dude, come on. We're friends. We're just fighting. Get over it.
These are the ideals we aspire to. This is not the conditions in which we live.
Exactly. I agree you should not hit someone, but, you know.
Sometimes you gotta choke a bitch.
But sometimes you gotta choke a bitch.
And I think that's what's really holding liberty back, is watching two libertarians like fight is like two flailing wounded birds. And if we would just quit fighting in public, people would think we were more masculine and maybe not accuse us of being isolated.
Or get into real fights with our fists in public. No, I don't advocate that, everybody. Just so you know.
Gotta go alpha. Yeah, so, and then it just kind of morphed into more of a collaborative effort. And we really, the first year, we only had 72 people listening to each episode. Now we're over 4,000. And according to one friend, that puts us on like the top 20% of all podcasts, which blows our mind.
Oh, yeah. And the fact that you even still have a podcast, I think so. I read something like most podcasts, like something like, I'm making these numbers up, by the way, something like 60% of podcasts don't make it past like episode 8. So our sheer existence puts us in the top tier. Which is nice. All I have to do is breathe and continue talking, and I'm considered top tier.
we want to do this every week. It's just really hard to get that many people together every single week. And, you know, we really knew we had made it when Professor Tom Woods was speaking at the YAL event last year earlier this year in 2015 at a YAL Ohio convention, and recommended his podcast, the Mises podcast, and our podcast. We were like, holy cow. This is like serious. We need to like do research or something.
Why did we quit editing?
Tom Woods listens. We have to impress him.
Why did we stop editing?
Yeah, exactly.
Hilarious.
I've said the C word on this podcast.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I just did a show with Brian McWilliams today where he said the C word. And I was like, really? Come on. That's like the one word. Like any other word, I'll just leave in there. I'm like, that one. I'm like, I got to take it out.
I've ever hung around 24-year-olds. That's their favorite word, especially women.
Really?
Really?
Is that the case? Because when I grew up, you really were not supposed to say that, especially anywhere near a woman. When I grew up. What the hell? How old am I now? Why am I saying things like that?
It is different with millennial women.
Is that like with a Y added, or is that just...
No.
No?
Hard T.
Hard T.
Wow. Hard T.
Because I've yet to experience that in a while, but I don't hang out with a young, you know, 24-year-old.
I should have been a millennial if that's what these kids are doing.
Right.
It came too late.
I try to spend as much time with young women as possible.
Well, classic libertarian right there.
Yeah.
So what, you know, you guys are really immersed, especially Chris. I know for many years you're so immersed in the libertarian movement, seeing kind of all angles of it, seeing the sort of, you know, every man kind of thing, and the, and actually being involved in, you know, career libertarianism in a way for some time. So, Chris, I'm just wondering what kind of observations you have, because obviously we don't live in a libertarian country or a libertarian society or whatever, anything resembling what you might want to envision as ideal. So why do you think these ideas of liberty aren't, you know, taking off as fast as they should be or could be? Or do you think that the liberty movement is actually doing pretty well, all things considered?
Oh, I definitely think it is. When I was at the radio station in 2007, 2008, I have tape of me somewhere on my own website on air making fun of Ron Paul as a crackpot. And then
that
was sort of what everybody did. They mocked him. And then I actually started to listen to him and listen to what he was saying, and it started to make sense. And the authenticity of Ron Paul really spoke to people, just as the alleged sincerity and authenticity of Trump and Bernie Sanders are speaking to people today. But Ron Paul had a record that matched his rhetoric. And, you know, when you have somebody who is your message bearer, getting a platform in a time where people are very change minded, and he's very passionate and he's willing to say that the hard things as opposed to what everybody wants to hear. I think that really hit a chord in 2008, 2012, especially with young people who are frustrated with their situation. And, you know, in 2009, when I started at the Libertarian Party and we were working on messaging for candidates, you didn't talk about pot. I mean, it was a 2009, as we were preparing for the 2010 cycle, and in the 2010 cycle, it was a conservative cycle. We were talking about low taxes. We were talking about small business opportunities. And you didn't mention things like anti-war issues. You didn't mention privacy because it wasn't even really talked about as much. You didn't mention pot at all.
And hell, even Democrats weren't talking about pot. Absolutely. I mean, openly, not like they are now.
Yeah, by 2012 and certainly now by 2016, it's much more liberal. And I think as millennials have started to have more of a voice, you know, we've grown up with cultural influences like Howard Stern, Ron, you know, with South Park, and a lot of different libertarian cultural influences that we've bathed in. We are a libertarian generation. A third of us are libertarian, according to one new study, where baby boomers, it's an eighth. So as we have more powerful voice in politics and in society and in culture, it's things become more and more libertarian, and that's only going to continue to progress. What we're having a hard time capturing in the libertarian movement is any kind of not centralized but cohesive organization.
Careful, the anarchists are already getting upset.
Well,
organization, that sounds dangerous.
Yeah, well, organization is part of how politics and human beings work. We work within social structures. And with the Republicans, you have a top-down structure. And that just does not work with libertarians. With Democrats, you have more of a coalition party where you've got these various interest groups that work together to find these common interests, like labor. And libertarians have not figured out how to work together to kind of build that coalition party yet. We can't even decide what party we want to work within. And to be fair, the current state of the Libertarian Party is absolutely abysmal. And, you know, it's not a functioning vehicle for candidates to get support. So
the state level parties seem to be very highly functioning.
Absolutely.
You know, agents to progress the liberty message. But I don't understand why the National Committee and the National Party just, man, it seems like they're out to lunch and it's a power grab every time and they alienate each other and then everything disintegrates.
Hilariously, it's plagued by bureaucracy.
So, I mean, isn't any large organization almost inevitably going to be plagued by bureaucracy in some ways? I mean, I feel like that's almost inevitable, free market or otherwise.
Yeah, it's just human nature. And if the Libertarian Party became the majority party in the United States, they would probably become corrupt. Because that's just sort of the nature of the beast. I mean, government and organizations are full of humans, and human beings are not perfect. They're full of imperfections and mistakes and errors. And anytime you have a large group of human beings, their errors work in concert to make one dysfunctional organization.
Because I kind of see the Libertarian Party as a, like, for instance, a center of gravity within the two existing parties. I tend to believe the American electorate, you know, when not worrying about ISIS or, you know, not watching sensationalist news, trends towards a more libertarian position.
The problem is that that fear of ISIS or whatever, the boogeyman of the day, seems to always override all the otherwise perhaps rational positions that people are starting to take.
Oh, absolutely, and without a doubt. So that makes it quite difficult. And I you know, I tend to think of where we are right now. Like Chris said, libertarianism is in a much better position than it has been, and I couldn't agree more. You hear it more in the media. But I think it's more of a rising tide, and then context really creates the scenarios where liberty catches its stride. We millennials grew up in, you know, Desert Storm wasn't a war anyone felt. You know, our parents didn't even feel it. 9/11 hit, and all of a sudden liberty took a huge leap back underneath the you know, guiding hand of a small government, quote unquote conservative like George W. Bush. But then people got tired of war, and so anti-interventionism has been a recurring theme. And then you have Snowden and people being spied on. And I think, for the most part, the average American citizen until Snowden couldn't even told you, you know, what the Fourth Amendment protected. Yeah. And now you have people that are raising political action, money for political action committees around it. So my hope is that we stay in an area or in a tide where libertarianism does continue to increase. An attack here, though, domestically by ISIS, I think we would go right back to where we started from 2001.
And that's what scares me. I mean, it seems like it just, even when something that didn't happen here, I mean, even after Paris, you see all these politicians calling for more surveillance and more militarism. And if something actually happens here, God forbid, I mean, it's going to be 1,000 times fold.
They arrested climate protesters underneath emergency terrorism laws in Paris yesterday.
Lord, yeah, Paris has some really bad anti-speech laws, including, you know, even if you're, because I guess now that's the thing. That's what Bernie Sanders recently said to debate this line we're hearing now, is that climate change is responsible for terrorism. So I guess if you're saying something bad about climate change, you're, you know, helping the terrorists. I don't really know.
You're part of ISIS.
Something like that.
If you don't have a hybrid, you're basically fueling ISIS's rise.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, that's why we've seen so much terrorism out here in California with our drought, right? Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Well, you have the Enviro-Nazis.
I mean, as we go to record this in San Bernardino, there's been a tragedy where there has been a shooting and early reports. Now, of course, we have no idea who is at they've surrounded a black SUV like just now. So by the time somebody else hears this, they'll already know all that happened. But 4chan, always inaccurate, says it was someone with a Muslim name. You know, and so it's so easy for these lone wolves to create these terrorist attacks. And I include, you know, someone who goes into a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado as a terrorist. But does that mean that you start eroding their privacy freedoms just because you just can't capture lone wolves? And we have this problem in this country now where we feel that every single person should leave their home in the morning and come home safely at night. And that's just not how life works. There's no government that can ensure that you come home at night, and bad stuff happens. That's just part of how the world works, and you know, you do your best to police it and stop it beforehand, but you can't start eroding freedoms because that's not going
to
work.
I mean, there are ways to keep everybody safe and to make sure, and that is to make sure we all stay in our houses. We got to stop just having companies that we go to. We got to all stay at home, and then we have a group of police officers outside every house, and then, you know, we'll all be fine. Nobody will hurt each other, and, you know, maybe we won't be as free, but, eh.
Who will build the bulletproof vests?
Exactly. One thing I want to get your guys' thoughts on, because I know you guys are following this stuff as well. You recently did a reaction show about the GOP and Democrat debates. We've taken on a task that I'm already regretting, but we committed to it early, so now we're still doing it. Every time there's a GOP debate or a Democrat debate, we do a live blog, and we immediately record a reaction show afterwards. The only
The only good thing about that is that we do it while, you know, having a few adult beverages, so it kind of helps lessen the sting a little bit. But, you know, you talked about Ron Paul a few minutes ago and how he was so bold in the debates and how he captured the hearts of so many people and changed the way people were viewing politics. And yet we've got his son up on stage there, and I think he is doing a lot of good things and saying a lot of correct things, but yet he's not capturing that spirit, I guess, at all, because he's not raising the kind of money that Ron raised, and he's certainly not even doing as, I mean, I think Ron was doing better in the polls at this point even. So, I mean, what do you attribute this to?
I know for me, with Rand, I see it entirely. He has the libertarian disease. He can't wait to be right up on stage. He is looking at his moment to show off and demonstrate that he knows the policy inside and out. And then he gives this little smirk, condescending look over at everybody, and then realizes he's going to be kicked down to the
gym. The interesting thing about that is that's how he starts every other statement. Oh, well, the interesting about it's like he puts on his sort of snarky professor mode.
Right. And, you know, he grew up an anarcho-capitalist. There's YouTube videos of him defending it. And that was a mistake because he has none of his dad's likability and none of his dad's ability to succinctly capture a message like of basically indeterminate non-interventionism in policy across the board. And so Rand is a guy that is definitely an advocate and a great leader of the liberty movement, but he belongs in the Senate, because my other criticism is I actually counted the first debate. No candidate said, "When I am president," less than Rand Paul. And he didn't say it until he was asked by the moderator, what would a Rand Paul presidency look like? And
he's like, "What? Never thought of that."
Yeah, like, how can you ask people to donate to your campaign when you don't even think you can be president?
And that's the weird thing, because if he doesn't think he can be president, then why tiptoe around things? Why not be even bolder? Why not truly run an educational campaign if he truly has, I don't know, anarcho-capitalist beliefs or what have you? If you're not trying to actually be president, because that's the excuse you hear from everybody, well, I know, but in order to be president, you got to say certain things. In order to win a Republican nomination, you got to toe a certain line. But he's not doing that. He's not even doing that well. So, I mean, I just don't see either. You got to go full educational or actually want to be president and try to win. And it seems like he's doing some weird middle ground where neither are what's happening.
Yeah. And he has a trust problem. I mean, I don't trust him. And, you know, Greg and Creighton will sit across the table and say, but, you know, Ron Paul said to your face one time, which is true, you know, my son believes what I believe. I said, but that's not what he says. Like, and I don't want a politician who's just going to lie to be president just because he's on my team. Like, that's, I'm for honesty. Not,
but that's a pretty high bar for any politician, don't you? Wouldn't you say
he is wishy washy? And
he is.
He feels like he's totally full of crap. And you can get away with that if you're somewhat inspiring, like Donald Trump. But you, no, I'm just kidding.
You say that, but it's true. Like, I mean, I find myself sometimes listening to Donald Trump. The same thing happened to me with Bill Clinton sometimes. I'll have the news on and he'll come on. That's not actually true. I never watch the news. But point being, I'll be listening to one of these guys talk and I'll suddenly like forget I'm a rational human being for a minute. And I'll get sucked into the speech. And like before I know it, I'm like, hey, this guy sounds pretty good. Oh, I gotta slap myself, because it's like these guys are so masterful with how they present themselves. I don't know if you've seen any of this stuff about Trump. If you Google Donald Trump is a wizard, you'll find an article by Scott Adams about this, where he talks about all the methods that Trump uses to sort of seduce people, and they're extremely effective.
Yeah, and you know, I had problems with the elder Ron Paul, Ron Paul, in 2012, if you listen to the early episodes of We Are Libertarians, and it was because he was a Republican, and I was a diehard Libertarian Party member at the time, and I still am. I don't believe that you can change it from the inside in the Republican Party. I think a third party is our best hope. But I believed Ron Paul, and Ron Paul inspired me to be a Libertarian. And Rand Paul, you know, despite my reservations about Ron Paul, after Rand Paul, I'm ready to deify Ron Paul. I'm just like, are you kidding me? This was I miss him. I want to hug him. And I just I don't trust Rand Paul. And I think a lot of libertarians just kind of he ran out of the benefit of the doubt with libertarians. And he doesn't have whatever Ron Paul has, which inspires the youth vote to get out and money bomb for him. The base, you know, they just took for granted the base of libertarians that would be there to support him. And, you know, those people are now either not voting or they are looking at like Ted Cruz or Donald Trump
or waiting for Gary
or waiting for Gary Johnson to get into the race.
And the funny thing about Ted Cruz is, I mean, I'm not a Cruz fan, but in some ways when he's up on the debate, he sounds more Ron than Rand. I mean, he comes out about stronger about, I mean, not on some issues, obviously, not on foreign policy, not on the war on drugs, but he comes out strong against the Federal Reserve. And then Rand will come and respond and be like, oh, yeah, I kind of agree with him, too. I've got some bill about that.
Exactly right. Yeah, he's just not an inspiring person. And Ted Cruz is a great example of somebody who can say something that they might half believe and is sort of full of shit. But you go, I could buy it from that guy. You know, and Ted Cruz also is steeped in Austrian economics. The head of FEE was here, Lawrence Reed. Was here in Indianapolis at the Liberty Fund, which is headquarters in Indianapolis, and gave a talk and said, Ted Cruz, when he was in high school, came to all kinds of Austrian economics courses and, you know, was constantly contacting FEE and the Mises Institute for more information, which tells you that Ted Cruz has never seen a vagina in his life.
That took a turn I did not expect it to take, young man.
Well, neither did he.
I mean, to me, he's the ultimate, like, lizard person. He, you know, his demeanor is like Jimmy Stewart, you know, very, like, it's totally perfectly crafted, unassuming, you know, Mr. Smith goes to Washington idealist, but then, you know, he would stab a guy in an alley in order to get the nomination. And that's why I don't identify with Ted.
Because of the stabbing possibilities, yeah.
Well, did you not feel, I mean, the guy was he was the attorney general in Texas, appointed by W. Bush, but prior to running for Senate. And, oh, man, I just think that he can do everything too well. You know, he's just got that
apparently he was, like, the best debater ever at Harvard, and he's just, like, a total...
An actual debate champion at Princeton.
Yeah, Princeton, sorry, whatever. I get all those places that I would never get into confused. But yeah, but he's clearly very comfortable on a stage. He's an amazing orator. He really knows how to make himself sound correct, whether or not he is, which is why he was a champion debater, because you don't have to be correct to win a debate. You have to sound correct to win a debate. And that's something that Ted Cruz excels at, which is actually really frightening, because, you know, some of the things that he actually stands for when it comes to foreign policy, when it comes to the drug war, are terrible to me. And to think that some liberty-esque people are going to end up flocking to and voting for him, even though he's good on some things. He's great on the Second Amendment. I mean, he's decent on the Fed. He's good on some things. But somehow he seems to be capturing. I hear more libertarians talking about Ted Cruz than Rand Paul, and that just blows my mind. But that's more a testament to Rand Paul's lack of ability to convey what he believes or what is his vision for what should be the right way to do things, and more than it. Well, now it also says a lot about Ted Cruz, I guess. It says both. Well,
how many focus groups did he run it by before? You
like
know,
thousands.
Both of them, but
announcing
Cruz,
it at Liberty University, your presidential campaign, Jerry Falwell's university.
Right.
I mean,
but hell, do you remember where Rand Paul announced his campaign?
Yeah, hotel in Louisville, but I don't know. It may have been a Hampton Inn.
I didn't even know that.
Oh.
I mean, it could have been the, you know, Saudi Arabia for all I know. I don't remember.
No, I mean, it's disappointing, though, because there is no one to feel. I feel like they're, the Liberty movement can kind of build a coalition around this cycle. I mean, I hear so many people talking about Bernie that I never thought in my entire life would be Bernie supporters. One of them we know was Gary Johnson's Ohio field director last time around. And then...
Wow, that's quite a change.
Yeah, and then you have, like, Chris Cantwell coming out in support of Trump. I mean, you got Bernie and Trump, and libertarians are saying, my God, just give us a functioning choice.
Did Christopher Cantwell actually come out and say, I support Donald Trump? Did that happen?
He on Facebook, he referred to himself as a... anarcho neocon.
Oh God, I give up.
I mean, he obviously is an enormous troll, so
yeah,
I doubt he's actually serious. But there is something that when Trump speaks, you say, I'd follow that guy. You know, I mean, he's a master promoter and salesman.
Oh, absolutely. And he's doing a brilliant job at his presidential campaign. Beliefs aside, just looking at what he's done, it's incredible. And now maybe you can just attribute to the fact that he's a multi-billionaire and you could almost do anything if you have that many billions. But I mean, he says things people want to hear, and he says things like, he says really bold, ridiculous things. And I don't think it matters what those things are, as long as he's saying it confidently and boldly. I want to build a wall. We must build a wall. Forget if that makes sense or not. I just said something very powerfully, and people connect with that, and they say, wow, this guy has strong positions. And that's something that you definitely don't get from Rand Paul.
No. I mean, he does have great luck, though, too, because you look at when he said, I want to bomb the hell out of ISIS and take their oil. a day and a half later, Paris gets attacked.
Right.
And then
we also find out that ISIS is like selling oil through Turkey. So it's like, oh my God, he's right, even though he's not right about his prescriptions, but he's right about certain things that are going on.
He like lucked out. He lucks out on the news cycle. Like it seems like every time, you know, and even when he says the most awful things, people are like, I like it. He doesn't apologize.
Right.
That's what we need in a leader.
No apologies.
Yeah. He's the anti-Romney.
I sort of agree. That's what we need in a leader. I wish it was Rand Paul that was the no apologies guy, you know, not him.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know. I haven't seen anybody up and coming in the Liberty Movement who embodies the ability to sell it and the ideals that gets me excited, really.
Amash may be close to that. But
he's a nerd.
Yeah.
Huge nerd.
Yeah. I like Thomas Massey. He seems pretty cool. But that's the extent of my analysis.
Self-sustaining.
He's a bigger nerd than Amash. Yeah. I mean, I love him too, but huge ginger nerd.
Anyone that goes on Twitter to respond to accusations by making Doge memes cannot win the presidency.
Oh, boy. Well, gentlemen, we could definitely, we could go on for hours and hours talking about this stuff, but we got some more things to do later in the day, so why don't we wrap this thing up? But, it's really been a great time connecting with you guys, and like I said, I've been listening to the show for some time. I'm a big fan of what you guys are doing and how you approach discussing liberty, and by that, I mean, like, normal freaking people and not, like, you know, uptight little nosy, you know, well, you must agree with the following 17 principles or you're not a true libertarian. So, I really do appreciate the way you guys approach this stuff, and before I let you go, why don't you just let everyone know how they can find We Are Libertarians and maybe give that final pitch of why my audience should be coming over to your show and finding out just what you guys are all about.
Well, we have a really fun time, and I think we have a really funny show. And it is it's lasted 3.5 years, and we have a lot of different perspectives. And we're not always right, but you will learn a lot of different things, and you should probably Google what we say half the time. But, you know, the first time anyone ever heard of ISIS was probably on We Are Libertarians. We talked about ISIS, a year before anybody else talked about it.
At the Boston bombing.
Yeah.
Before it was cool.
Yeah, we're the original ISIS hipsters. And, you know, so we try to dig in deep and really take our time to wrestle with topics and do that with a completely irreverent sense of humor. So you can look us up on iTunes, on Stitcher. You can go to wearelibertarians.com. Feel free to friend Chris Spengel or Greg Lenz on Facebook and prepare for memes.
Yep.
The memes that go back and forth, the trolling that we do on each other has gotten out of control.
And I am friends with Chris on Facebook, and I can attest that the meme thing is true. And I don't know if I'll have to look up Greg right now.
No, I don't believe we are, because I was looking today, and I was like, I hope this guy is not.
Boom! I just friend requested you, so watch out.
Thank you. Well, I will accept, but I won't meme you. I follow the non-aggression principle.
With memes?
He is banned from Facebook today because of a series that he's done called Hitspiration. I was going through a rough patch, so I was posting a lot of inspirational quotes, and so he started taking those inspirational quotes and posting them over photos of Hitler. And somebody reported him today.
With a quote with a Chris Spengel on it.
Oh, it's so funny. It is funny. So he's banned. So I posted his phone number today and said, you know, sorry, Greg Lenz is very ill. That's why he's not posting today like normal. Please text him and wish him well.
And my mother emailed me to check in. Yeah, he's a real gem, a real mensch.
Greg, the Facebooks told me that you were. I don't know. I don't know why I made your mother an old Jewish grandmother, but that's my default mother voice.
No, that's good. That's very good.
Well, gentlemen, it's been a blast, and I'll definitely have to have you guys back on in the future. Like I said, we do reaction shows for every single debate, so if you ever get the cojones to actually sit through another one of these things and chat about it, you're welcome to come on the show, and we'll definitely be in touch in the future.
All right, thanks, man.
Yep.
Thanks, guys. Take care. All right, guys, and what a fun talk I had there with Chris Spengel and Greg Lenz. Now, I mentioned we had some more stuff to do. Well, that more stuff was keep talking, because I immediately recorded an interview for their show, for We Are Libertarians, and that will air shortly after the airing of this show. So I will link to that hopefully in the show notes today at lionsofliberty.com/166 whenever it gets up. And now I'm going to take a minute to do something I don't do nearly enough, and that is beg and plead with you guys that if you are a fan of this show, please do share it with your friends and family, especially during this holiday season. Over the dinner table, around the Christmas tree, around the Hanukkah menorah, it's a good time to maybe engage in a little political discussion. Keeping it respectful, of course, we don't need any family divisions, but it's a good time to talk politics, because, hey, who's going to listen to you more than your family? Well, hopefully.
There are, of course, a number of ways you can help us out in this holiday season. You can go over to iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you subscribe for the show. Subscribe to the show if you don't already subscribe, first of all. And please leave us a rating, hopefully a 5-star rating and a great review, so we can expose this show to other people. We've got a great little audience that we've built up here over the last couple of years. And I think we're really ready to take it to the moon. We've recently launched a third episode, or we will be next year in January. We'll be launching the Felony Friday podcast, as we announced next week on the Felony Report. You can check that out at lionsofliberty.com/165, or just tick back in your iTunes feed. And that means this podcast will soon be 3 days a week. Now, guys, we don't profit off this. This is not a money-making venture, but it does cost money to run. So there are many ways you can help us out with that. And one of them is to shop through our sponsors link. So, of course, you can go to lionsofliberty.com/Amazon to shop through our Amazon affiliate link. And if you have some liberty-minded friends, you might want to shop for a gift over at libertymaniacs.com. You can find our affiliate page at libertymaniacs.com/pages/lions, or you can find a link, of course, in the show notes as well. You can get 10% off your entire order just by shopping through that link over at Liberty Maniacs. Great political gear from our friend Dan McCall. I'd also like to invite you all to come join the conversation with us. If you haven't already, you can join our private group on Facebook. It's called the Lions of Liberty Forum. We always link to it in the show notes. You can also find it by going to your little search bar on Facebook and looking up Lions of Liberty Forum. It is a private group, but I will let you right in as long as you look like a real human being and not some form of spam or a total troll. Of course, there are many ways you can listen to the show. You can find it at lionsofliberty.com every single Monday and Thursday, soon to be every single Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. How exciting. You can also hear us on the weekends at libertytalk.fm, 6 p.m. Eastern, every single Saturday and Sunday, right before the Johnny Rocket Launchpad, as well as throughout the week on the Liberty Radio Network at lrn.fm. So many ways you can find this show. As we discussed with the boys earlier, there are some more debates coming up. We've got a Republican debate next week, and next Saturday, a Democrat debate, and we're going to do it once again. We're going to watch another Republican debate, and later in the week, another Democrat debate. The Republican debate is actually tomorrow, Tuesday night, if you're listening the day this is released. Tuesday, December 15th, we'll be live blogging the Republican debate. So head over to lionsofliberty.com for the live blog. We will immediately record a reaction show, and that will air this coming Thursday. And until then, folks, I only have one more word of advice, and that is, of course, to live long and live free.
Head of Editing and Mastering is John Dauber.
Contact Johnny53@gmail.com.